from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Anguillans going to the polls 4 years ahead of schedule. St. Lucian anger directed at American Airlines, and New Yorkers want Elian Gonzalez returned to Cuba. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. In Anguilla, the people are going to the polls in a Friday 10th March snap election announced by Chief Minister Hubert Hughes. The coming poll will be held 4 years before they are constitutionally due. Chief Minister Hughes, in a letter to Governor Robert Harris, has requested a dissolution of the island's House of Assembly tomorrow, Thursday. The election announcement followed the dismissal by the Anguilla High Court today of two suits brought by the Chief Minister against the Speaker of the House, Leroy Rogers. The suits arose out of the actions of the Speaker to adjourn meetings of the Assembly in August and September of last year when it cited lack of a quorum after an opposition boycott. Mr. Hughes' decision to call a snap poll reflects problems within the coalition government abandoned last year by then Finance Minister Victor Banks. Travel agents in St. Lucia have joined counterparts in several other Caribbean islands in announcing a boycott of American Airlines. They are angry over a decision by the airline to slash their ticket commissions. At the same time, the agents have warned the St. Lucia government that the American Airlines decision has implications for the wider economy. Pete Ninval reports.
On Manali was the way the president of the St. Lucia Association of Travel Agents, Gerard Begas, described AA's unsigned facts, informing travel agents here about the commission cuts. Mr. Bagas told the BBC the cuts would amount to travel agents losing some 30 cents in every dollar for selling American Airlines tickets, a loss that was eventually bound to drive them out of business. Today, the agents were seeking a meeting with the government to break what they described as the American Airlines stranglehold on St. Lucia. In the meantime, Mr. Bagas says it will not be business as usual with AA.
We have decided that we will direct our customers to alternatives to American Airlines as far as we can possibly do that. We will attempt to work more closely with Air Jamaica and BWIA, who are our indigenous carriers into the region. And I, this morning, attempted to get a hold of the Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Tourism to try and set up a meeting for the association with the ministry to discuss alternatives to American Airlines stranglehold on our travel.
It was a pointed reference by Mr. Bagas to the decision by the airline in April last year to halt a direct flight to the island because of an impasse over payment of a government subsidy. The St. Lucia government's position was simply that it would not be held to ransom. Now there are fears that other travel agents may be tempted to follow American Airlines in announcing ticket commission cuts. Mr. Newman Monrose is the managing director of a local travel business, International Travel Consultants.
This means very clearly that we are not going to be able to operate. Incidentally, if the other airlines follow suit on this, that means the travel agencies in this country and throughout the Caribbean have to shut their doors. I would like to go further than just a boycott. I would like to suggest to the rest of the travel agencies that we ask American Airlines to take away the Sabre sets.
Mr. Monrose explained that Sabre is a reservation system in use at St. Lucia's two airports. The system is owned by the parent company for American Airlines. Local travel agents now hope that the St. Lucia government will back the stand they have taken to boycott the airline with more than just plain talk. This is Pete Ninval in Castries, St. Lucia for BBC Caribbean Report.
As British tourists flock to Cuba this winter, there are concerns about the safety record of one of the airlines used to get them there, the Cuban national carrier Cubana. Two crashes in Guatemala and Venezuela over a four-day period in December killed 48 people. Cubana has had four fatal crashes in the past 4 years. One leading tour operator is already taking a hands-off approach to that particular airline. Orrin Gordon has the details.
Club Med say they're leaving it up to the customer to decide whether they'll travel with Cubana. That's a direct result of the two crashes in December. Club Med's press and PR manager Constance Perrin says they won't automatically book passengers on the Cuban airline as they used to.
Since the crashes, Club Med won't automatically book the clients on Cubana. We will ask the customers to choose their own company because Cubana is cheaper than other companies. If a client asks us to expressly to book his flight on Cubana, we'll book him on Cubana. Otherwise, it won't be automatically like it used to be.
The aviation expert David Learmount says Cubana is generally safe, but it's less safe than the other bigger airlines.
You've had four serious accidents in the last 3 years. You've had three in the last year and a half. There's something wrong. I mean, if they were the only people flying to Cuba, frankly, I would fly with them. But the point is, they're nothing like as safe as the alternative.
Up to 76,000 Britons could be using Cubana to get them to Cuba for their dream holiday. That's a relatively small proportion of the 2 million people expected to visit this year. But it's large enough for the travel companies to take notice. 26 people died in Guatemala when the Cubana plane missed a runway and crashed in a populated area. 22 died in the accident in Venezuela. Until recently, few in the airline industry could fault Cubana's record. Their fares are up to $225 cheaper on the London to Havana route. What Cubana will have to convince everyone of is that low cost doesn't necessarily mean a low standard.
Oren Gordon, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Hardline anti-Castro activists in Miami's exile community are meeting later today to determine whether to restart their campaign of civil disobedience. Their protests against the Cuban boy Elian Gonzalez being returned home caused chaos in Miami last week. The Cuban exiles now have to contend with clarification from Attorney General Janet Reno that Elian's future can only be determined at the federal level. She says the circuit court judge who awarded temporary custody to Elian's great uncle in Miami had exceeded her authority. The Attorney General says the U.S. government is prepared to go to federal court to uphold the Immigration Service's decision to return Elian to his father in Cuba. So is Attorney General Janet Reno right when she says the Florida court had no right to intervene in the Elian Gonzalez case because applying for asylum is a matter of federal immigration law? That's a question I put to David Abraham, professor of immigration law at Miami University.
Well, she is absolutely correct. Immigration law is an exclusive federal prerogative, and state courts have no role in this. A six-year-old child cannot on his own make application for asylum. A six-year-old child is in most respects not competent to speak for himself legally. So the question is, as it has been all along in this saga, who speaks for the six-year-old, then five-year-old, Elian Gonzalez? And the Attorney General and the INS under Doris Meisner have correctly, albeit too slowly, determined that the surviving parent, the father, is the responsible person to speak for this six-year-old child. It is not in the power of a state family court to attempt to overrule that or diminish that.
But Elian isn't likely to be returned by Friday, the original date, is he?
I think the critical mistake of the INS is not in its legal opinion, which is absolutely correct, but in its lack of backbone, which has led this to be protracted and allowed so much mischief to be generated.
Even if Ms. Reno brushes aside the court ruling, won't anti-Castro campaigners still be able to tie up the process of Elian's return with challenge after challenge?
The challenge brought in the Florida Family Court was invalid. The judge had no jurisdiction to hear that case. As we move up the judicial ladder in the United States, one would hope that the respective courts would act more quickly in rebuffing invalid efforts.
Professor David Abraham, the U.S. Immigration Service has suspended its deadline of Friday for returning Elian to Cuba. Officials say that's in order to allow a definitive court case to take place. And the struggle over Elian, which has sparked protests in Cuba and Miami, has spread to New York. Demonstrators marched and were arrested outside the New York offices of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. Leslie Goff reports.
Protesters determined that Elian Gonzalez be sent back to his father in Cuba marched on the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service in New York yesterday. 11 of the demonstrators were arrested and charged with disorderly conduct for blocking the entrance to the federal building. Among them was the Reverend Luis Barrios.
The white community, the black community, and the Latino community that is not Cuban, they say send this kid back to his father. And most of the Cubans that do not belong to the Cuban Foundation, that mafia organization, they also saying send the kid back to the father.
And those who want Elian returned to his father in Cuba seem to have the upper hand on Wednesday, as the U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno announced that a Florida state court had no right to intervene in the case. But Dr. Max Castro of the University of Miami said Cuban exiles in Florida had already begun talking darkly of their cause being betrayed once again by the U.S. government.
Again, the sense of betrayal that the U.S. government, from the Bay of Pigs to the trial of anti-Castro Cubans, who apparently were going to kill Fidel Castro, something the U.S. government long tried to do, that this is the last in a long series of betrayal of the exiles.
The New York protesters, the committee to demand the return of Elion to his father, say they'll continue demonstrating in front of the Immigration and Naturalization Building until Elion Gonzalez is returned to Cuba. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Leslie Goff in New York.
Guyana's access rates dispute with American telecoms giant AT&T has emerged as part of a bigger problem that CANTO, the Caribbean Association of National Telecommunications Organizations, has been trying to resolve. CANTO officials say they've not been happy with what they describe as unilaterally stipulated rates for settlements put forward by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, FCC. The matter has been taken before the ITU, the International Body for Telecommunications, which has established a committee to look into the issue. CANTO Secretary General Selby Wilson told me he's also raised the issue with FCC officials.
And I got the distinct impression that they had almost mandated AT&T to pursue the reduction in international rates aggressively. And by that I mean they didn't want to wait until the declared date to get the rate down to a certain level. But they wanted to set a pattern of annual reductions.
But GT&T are not willing to put down their prices to the rate AT&T are suggesting. Surely this sort of price cut is now inevitable everywhere.
There is an acceptance that there will be a reduction in settlement rates and in the international rates. But it is the rate at which it will take place. There is a very strong feeling, even internationally, that the FCC does not have the authority to stipulate the rate at which those prices should come down. Now, the problem isn't as simple as it appears, because while rates for domestic services have been at levels probably below cost, it requires a whole rebalancing of the domestic rates in order to accomplish reductions on the international side.
What Caribbean consumers are interested in, though, are lower rates, both international and domestic.
Surely they deserve
the right to enjoy cheaper telephone rates as international prices come down.
Consumers cannot have their cake and eat it. We know that in most countries, certainly in the Caribbean, the domestic rates are lower than cost. I mean, domestic subscribers are subsidized by the rates charged for business lines, the rates charged for business services, and for rates charged out of international calls. So once you begin to tamper with bringing those rates more in line with their true costs, then domestic rates will have to go up. So it is not true to say that the subscribers in the Caribbean are not enjoying reasonable telephone rates.
Selby Wilson. Despite delays in Haiti's electoral system, CARICOM officials are upbeat about local and legislative elections being held there in March and April. These elections were originally scheduled for November last year but had to be postponed. The process has been plagued with delays. CARICOM officials, however, are hoping that there is now a greater degree of readiness to hold the elections. I asked CARICOM's special envoy to Haiti, Vincentian Prime Minister James Mitchell, whether Port-au-Prince was now expecting additional help because it's been accepted into the regional grouping.
We are giving what we can within the framework of our budget. We can mainly supply personnel. We will be continuing the dialogue with them to see what further assistance they require. I am not yet sure whether all the electoral lists are in order. I'm not yet sure that all the registration is in order. One of the problems was the number of security personnel in Haiti, and they had, at one stage, more polling stations. We can mainly supply personnel. We will be continuing the dialogue with them to see what further assistance they require. I am not yet sure whether all the electoral lists are in order. I'm not yet sure that all the registration is in order. One of the problems was the number of security personnel in Haiti, and they had, at one stage, more polling stations than police. So we have to watch that.
Europe has cancelled its electoral aid. EU funds, which were meant for printing ballots, are apparently no longer going to Haiti. Does this put pressure on Haiti's remaining donors in Canada and the Caribbean to give more help?
Well, certainly we have to assess the situation and to see whether the situation can be settled. Part of the problem in Haiti, when I went there, I discovered is that they have 100 political parties.
Sir James Mitchell, and before we go, a look at our top stories again. Anguillans going to the polls 4 years ahead of schedule. St. Lucian anger directed at American Airlines, and New Yorkers want Elian Gonzalez returned to Cuba. That's it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. Join us at 11:05, 11:15, and 12:10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.